Welcome to another edition of Prime Flicks, the 15-minute film discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ed. Each week on Prime Flicks, we pick a film, watch it, and discuss it. Our films are always available to stream on Netflix and or Amazon Prime, so you can watch the film and listen to the discussion and join right in. My guest for this week is Dean. You might remember him from a couple episodes back. Welcome back, Dean.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Our film for the week was the Christmas horror comedy, I guess would be the best way to lay it out. Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. It was released in 2010. Has a rating of 6.7 on IMDb, a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 71 out of 100 on Metacritic. So, right out of the gate, Dean, what was your impression of this film?
Well, to be honest with you, I only signed up to watch this film because I knew that you had wanted to watch it, and I had no idea what to expect going in, and I was really pleasantly surprised at how much I enjoyed the film. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm not even sure I would call it a comedy. I feel like the first, like, two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the film, maybe even more, are almost, like, Spielbergian in quality. You know, there are some kind of funny things that happen, but mostly it's like a, you know, like a monster movie.
Yeah, I guess that's true. When I was watching it, I was thinking a little bit of Super 8 at first. Mm-hmm. You know, because it, and like you said, Spielbergian, because you're following the children around and they're, you know, you're seeing it through their eyes in a sense. And I always like that. Someone pointed out at one point that those kinds of movies are supposed to help sort of, or at least are supposed to put the audience in the mind of a child, which is like the ideal way to view a film, because anything on the screen is possible. You know, when you're a kid, you're not seeing CGI, you're just seeing things you've never seen before, you know?
It's really funny that you mentioned that you thought it was like Super 8, because I actually happened just by chance to see Super 8. I didn't see it in the theater, but I happened to watch it just like 2 days prior to watching Rare Exports. Just completely on accident. Had no idea they were going to be related. And I had written that down as well, that there are a lot of really, really nice parallels that you can draw between the films.
Yeah, and I think Super 8 got a weird mixed kind of. I think it got a positive, generally positive attack. You know, kind of. I'm losing my words.
Reception.
Today. Reception, yes, from the critics, but it also kind of got panned too for, I guess, having a disappointing ending or whatever. Which actually, in this film, had I think the ending was sort of the bow on top of the whole thing.
Yeah, I would say so.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I kind of thought I would, though, going into it. So I'm glad to hear that you did, too, because I wasn't sure if I had just kind of set myself up with these expectations and then, you know.
Well, the way that you had described it to me prior to me deciding or agreeing to watch it with you is that you said it basically what you said to open this podcast, that it's a, like, it's a horror film about Christmas. And I thought, well, this is going to be awful because A, I generally don't like horror films. And B, I generally don't like horror films. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, from the description, and I intentionally try not to, for films like this, I try not to look too much into them because I don't want to ruin anything. But from the description, it had seemed like, you know, more of a slasher movie or something, less so than a monster movie. And so I was very pleasantly surprised by that. It was much more watchable than I was anticipating. I was actually anticipating it being a little bit disturbing and all that kind of stuff. So I was happy that that wasn't the case.
Yeah, it really rides that line really nicely of being, you know, it's told through the point of view, like you mentioned, of the child, but I feel like children of a certain age could watch this and enjoy it. You know, it's not too scary. It's not too creepy. I mean, and we can talk about the ending, right? Because
absolutely, spoilers away. Yeah.
Okay. The elves or the helpers. Little helpers were about the creepiest part of the film, and it's really just because they're old naked guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's creepy. But it was more suspenseful than it was, scary at mm-hmm. any point.
Yeah, and they're old naked guys with no purpose, which maybe is more terrifying than just old naked guys.
Yeah, they
alone.
Definitely...
at least at the end of the film.
were, you know, completely out of it, which... Mm-hmm. You know, is explained in the film rather nicely, actually.
Yeah.
I have to say, one of my favorite things about watching a suspense film like this, and you can see it in Hitchcock and you can see it in Spielberg, and I think that's why this film... I think the difference between Hitchcock and Spielberg is the whimsy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why this film feels very Spielbergian. Uh-huh. But the thing that those two do, which is so awesome, is the way in which they reveal the monster.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually really late in the film. And mm-hmm. this film does it basically without ever revealing the monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, you see the pictures that the child has, you know, the drawings, and you see the horns or whatever, but you don't really ever see... you know, and they do the old switcheroo, right? So this whole time you're terrified of this guy that you think is the monster,
right?
And then at the last minute you're like, oh wait, no, it's not. You know,
yep.
I thought that was great because you know you're watching that whole the scene with them in like the slaughterhouse, and they're just expecting, okay, when's something going to happen? When is like one of them going to turn their back and he's going to spring to action, or you know.
Right, he's gonna be sucked into the guy's lungs. Or...
Right, right. They, you know, like, kind of like the thing or something. You know, expecting him to something crazy to happen or whatever.
Yep.
But it was interesting. I also love when they set up the premise for a film and don't ever seem to care that you know, like, what the real intentions were. Like, they were talking about, you know, them digging to dig up Santa Claus, basically,
right?
But they don't really ever say, and they want
why
him, but they don't really there's no, it's just this menacing other corporation or whatever that
right.
who knows what they would want to use him for, but they just never even feel the need to tell you that. And I like it sometimes when they do that, when they recognize like this isn't why you're watching the movie.
It's completely unnecessary. And that's actually one of the things I had written down too, was the cool thing about this film is that even though a child could understand it and it's told from a child's point of view, there's no excessive exposition in the film at all.
No.
There's no line saying, well, the reason that Santa Claus is locked in a block of ice is because of this.
Right.
You know, they just say he's locked in a block of ice, you know.
Right.
And you have to infer a lot of things, and I think it takes a little more work to watch the film, but it doesn't feel like work because they're presenting it very well, you know, very easily.
That's something that I've always wondered, because I like to watch a lot of foreign films when I hear about good ones, and it does seem that regardless of the culture they come from, you know, most of the ones I tend to see, I think, tend to be more...
they're probably the really good ones.
They're the, yeah, exactly. But I'm just thinking about across the different cultures. You know, this one is from, is it Sweden?
I can't remember. Finland.
Or Finland, okay. I get those mixed up sometimes. Not intentionally. Sorry to anybody listening
offended by that. And the Swedish.
But it does seem that, especially when you take a foreign film and you take its American version, you see a lot more of the, like you said, unnecessary exposition that seems like it's there to just, in the American version, that is there to direct the story. So mm-hmm. A good example that I can think of is The Departed, the American version, and Infernal Affairs, I think it was a Hong Kong version, mm-hmm. it was called Infernal Affairs, and the backstory in Infernal Affairs happens over the beginning credits. And the backstory for The Departed happens over the first half hour of the movie in the American version. And so the just stark difference and little things like, you know, and so sometimes I see that in these films. And I actually kind of, as a person who pays really close attention when I watch a movie, I kind of appreciate it when they don't go overboard. Mm-hmm. Although I'm more often the person who's sitting there with people where they're going, wait, what was that? Why did that happen?
Yeah, that always happens. You know,
and I'm always the one saying, well, that happened. You're supposed to kind of get that this person is pregnant, but they didn't really say that, but it's kind of inferred because, you know, it's been this many years or whatever. So it's a... I like that, though. And that's one of the reasons I think I seek out these kind of good, you know, foreign films when I hear about them. And I in general, Ebert and I agree more than we disagree on things. So when he said it was good, I was like, okay, I'll check this out.
Yeah, I find that too. And yeah, I think it's just, it's better storytelling. It's more crafted. It's more nuanced storytelling. And that's always more satisfying to watch.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I like the novel take too, obviously. Trying to take something and kind of turn it on its head.
Yeah, the thing that I was wondering about this film, and I don't know if you did any research into the legends at all, but I was wondering what the Finnish audience would have thought of it. You know, would they have been aware of these legends, or was it just as obscure to their culture as it was to ours?
Yeah, no, I'd never looked that up. I mean, I know that Santa in some cultures is less jovial and nice, but I don't think he's, like, evil. Yeah, because this could just be, like, a straight telling of an actual, like, you know, Finnish version of Santa Claus, or it could be just as novel to them as it is to people who are used to the Coca-Cola Santa Claus, you know?
As he calls him in the film.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Which I thought was really cool. Which, well, and that made me think that this is sort of obscure to them, maybe not as obscure as it is to American audiences, but the fact that he specifically references the Coca-Cola Santa Claus, you know, the version that we all know and love,
yep,
you know, is really cool. What did you think of the very last, the epilogue of the film? I thought it was cool in that it sort of solidified the movie as a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was, and they reference fairy tale, the specific word, at least in the English subtitles, they use fairy tale a lot when they talk about Santa Claus. And it seemed to me that was their idea behind this film, was that it would be a dark, grim sort of fairy tale.
Yeah.
Grim, as in the proper
name. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Two M's.
And yes. and then to have that little twist on the end that's just sort of humorous, and like you said, changes the mood just a little bit, I think gives it that, it really solidifies that whimsy in the film, and you says, we're just joking around.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I like the cool little, there's a couple other movies where you see that, and some of them are, you know, I think like the Big Lebowski, it brings the narrator character back in a couple times to kind of remind you
as
that it's
a character,
just a tale. Yeah.
Yep.
And I like that too. I like that too, because it does, yeah, it does kind of remind you, like, yeah, a bunch of weird stuff happened and people died, but like, it's all just in good fun. Well, that's it for the main discussion. If you'd like to continue the discussion, you can do so in any number of ways. You could hit us up on the website at primeflix.tumblr.com, at primeflix on Twitter, via email at primeflix@gmail.com, or you can leave some audio feedback by calling us at 414-216-FLIX. That's FLIX, FLIX. But if you want some more streaming recommendations to get you through the next episode, we're always happy to help you out in that regard. We mentioned a couple films already. I'm not sure if any of them are streaming, but I do have one suggestion sort of related in that it's a Norwegian film, and it's about monsters. It's called Troll Hunter. Which is exactly what you think it would be. It's about a documentary film crew of students who are trying to track down... they start out by trying to discover whether or not there's a rash disturbance. Lots of bears are dying, so they're trying to figure out what's happening. And they sort of stumble upon this old guy who tells them he's hunting trolls for the Norwegian government. And they follow him sort of Cloverfield Cam style, on his adventures to find out whether he's crazy or not. So it's a really fun movie, and it's available on, I believe, both Prime and on Netflix. So, Dean, did you have any suggestions?
I would just say that if you like rare exports and vice versa, you should see Super 8, because that's also streaming on Netflix. That's where I watched it this last weekend. And like we mentioned before, there's a lot of parallels, i.e. the child-father relationship and the child's point of view. And it's a monster movie. And it's got some whimsy in it, less, yes. I would say, but there are some really funny, you know, more contemporary funny scenes in there. Mm-hmm. So you can check Absolutely. That one out on Netflix.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed that one a lot. So that should tide you over. Our coming attraction for next week, my co-host will be Ben. We'll be watching the 2010 documentary, American, the Bill Hicks story. That's it for this week. It's been fun. Just a reminder, as a podcast, our exposure is driven by ratings from listeners like yourself. So if you listen to us on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it if you could drop by our page there and give us a rating or a review or both. So until next week, happy streaming.